Hello, and welcome to Essential Work, exploring the past, present, and future of jobs. This podcast brought to you by the Battle of Homestead Foundation. I'm Nathan Ruggles. Thank you so much for listening. Now, every week, we're bringing you stories, perspectives, and interviews all about what people on the job are facing, have faced, and will be facing. Through a unique lens of history and time, we discuss the struggles of workers, the struggles many of us or any of us might encounter in the workplaces of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. This is our fourth episode. In our feature interview, we continue our focus on the struggles of food service workers with part two of our conversation with the nonprofit organization, the Restaurant Opportunities Center Pittsburgh, and their work fighting to improve wages and working conditions. Following that, we sit down with Battle of Homestead Foundation Communication Manager Larry McCullough and hear about the latest upcoming free online events hosted by the organization. Now, Larry is also our music guru, and we finish the episode, as we do, with a song selection, another inspired by the theme of the restaurant worker. Now, battleofhomestead.org is the online home of our sponsor, the Battle of Homestead Foundation. They are a group of workers, educators, historians, and everyday people who have made it their mission to preserve and promote, interpret a people's history. They focus on all the significance that comes out of the dramatic labor conflict that took place in Homestead, Pennsylvania in 1892, a site right outside of Pittsburgh where this podcast is produced. Please check them out. We invite you to join as a member or consider a donation. It supports all their work and programming, including this podcast. We're also happy to announce you can now subscribe to us on Amazon Music. That's now in addition to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. Check out our whole list of podcast platforms and past episodes as well, including part one of this episode's conversation at essentialworkpodcast.org. If you enjoy what you're hearing, share us on your favorite social media. While you're at it, please be sure to give us that five-star rating and a positive review at the iTunes store. That really helps us out. And now, for part two of our conversation with Bobby Linskins, organizer with the Restaurant Opportunity Center Pittsburgh, and Abby Rideout, a member of ROC. Here we cover the issues of wages and benefits in the industry through Abby's experiences as a barista and Bobby's as a former server. So things got done because of your involvement with ROC. Now, I do want to talk about wages for a second because both of you have mentioned it. So, Bobby, you were tipped as a server. What were you making as a base, your base hourly?
$2.83 an hour.
Okay, plus tips.
Yes.
And so, and I think, you know, some people may not be aware that that's not the regular full minimum wage, right? That's a server wage because you're getting tips, right?
Correct.
And Abby, what do you typically see out there in barista jobs in terms of how wages work?
For baristas, especially at higher end coffee shops, I've seen the standard be set around $8 to $10 an hour. I've seen 10 most frequently. That being said, I worked for the Coffee Tree Roasters, which is another local chain. Their starting wage is minimum wage. I worked for Crazy Mocha, which is another local chain. Their starting wage is $7.50. And after 2 years of working with them, I was making $8 an hour. But typically about 10 is what I see.
And you said the other chain had minimum wage. And what was that at the time that you...
$7.25,
yeah. So I think the reality for some folks who, you know, which is why, you know, we need to talk about this, is they don't understand what these, you know, these wages look like and what these hours look like. And in terms of those tips, Bobby, can you explain to us about what the 80-20 rule is all about? What's that? What is that all about?
Absolutely. There is a rule that says that if your employer has you spending more than 20% of your time at work doing non-tipped work, such as cleaning and other side work, then they are not allowed to pay you less than the regular minimum wage. Then they have to pay you at least $7.25.
So recognizing that you don't have the ability to make tips during that time, right?
Right.
That you still have to be able to make $7.25 anyway.
Well, and I think it isn't only recognizing that you're not able to make tips at that time. I think it's also to prevent them from taking advantage, because theoretically, you would still be making at least $7.25 an hour because you made more than $7.25 an hour for the time that you were getting tips, and it can all average out, which is another issue, because you can have a really good night where you might make $100 in tips, and then you could have a really bad night where you only make $20 in tips, which maybe you didn't even make minimum wage for that day. But it doesn't matter, because as long as it averaged out over the pay period, then the employer does not have to make up that difference.
Yeah, if you've got that mid-afternoon shift, say you're working 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock, it could be a pretty dead room at a restaurant.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And unfortunately, the Department of Labor has decided to stop enforcing the 80-20 rule. And I've now heard that they released a new statement saying that your employer can give you as much side work as they want, as long as it is done immediately before, during, or after serving, then it's allowed.
So obviously enforcement is important, right? Because I don't see that we imagine that restaurants are going to abide by these rules on their own, right?
Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, when I was working at Eaton Park, as I told you, they dropped me down to only a 4-hour shift, but they didn't decrease any of the side work that I was doing. So I would serve tables for 4 hours, and then for 2 hours after that, I had to, you know, clean my section, roll silverware, and do one of the assigned cleanups. Sometimes they were trying to make me do 2 assigned cleanups instead of only 1, because they didn't have enough staff on the schedule to assign each person 1. And so many nights I was way over the 20%, and I would go to the managers and ask them, are you guys aware of the 80-20 rule? And they would tell me, yeah, we're aware of it. You need to clean faster.
Wow.
And basically it was like, yeah, nothing else we can do for you. Clean faster.
So something else too I want to ask you both about in terms of benefits, typically. Abby, what do you see in coffee shops? What do you see in terms of, like, are there benefits at all? Do you see that being offered much at all?
The only time I have ever been offered benefits in a service industry job was when I was working with the East End Food Co-op here in Pittsburgh. Nowhere outside of that has ever offered me anything along those lines. My favorite story in my 5 years of baristaing is that I've always been a morning person, so I was always working the opening shifts, which are super early in the morning.
People got to get that morning coffee on the way to work, right?
You know, I've worked coffee jobs where my alarm would go off at 3:30 in the morning because wow. I needed to have the store open by 5 a.m.
Sure.
So on those shifts, you tend to work alone. Unless, again, you're working for a big franchise, it tends to be just one person doing that work. And then after the store's been open for a little bit, another person will come in to help. And so I was the opener, and I had been playing with my dog one night, and my dog, being the crazy little thing that she is, like, headbutted me and broke my nose, like, fully broke it. Oh, and my. Then I passed out twice immediately afterwards trying to fix my nose because I was afraid to go to the hospital and get a bill I couldn't afford because I was uninsured. So then I ended up with a broken nose and a concussion because I hit the floor both times I fell. So I called my boss to tell him, you know, I don't think I can come into work at 6 a.m. tomorrow. It's like 8 o'clock. I'm bleeding everywhere. I know I have a concussion. I kind of want to stay up and see if I need to go to the doctor in a little bit, just evaluate the situation because 6 a.m. is coming up close. And he basically told me that if I didn't get it together and go in, that I would not have a job because there was no one else who could possibly, on such short notice, go do my job. And that at the very minimum, he needed me to go in and work half my shift for me to keep my job. So I got it together and I went in with a broken nose and two black eyes.
And a concussion.
And if I didn't do it, I wouldn't have a job.
That's incredible.
And, you know, I've worked in other coffee shops where I've tried to call out saying things like, I have a fever. And my manager has texted me back things saying like, have you tried taking Tylenol? That was one that I got multiple times, actually. Have you tried taking Tylenol or have you tried taking Pepto-Bismol? And that's not to say I haven't had some good managers, because I have. But more often than not, what I've experienced in coffee is that the owners make most of the decisions that management then has to follow through on. And what I've noticed, especially in specialized or indie coffee in Pittsburgh, is that the owners don't have a history in coffee. They have an interest in coffee. So they make their money doing something else. They have other businesses, they're landlords, they do something else. And then this is their project on the side. So sometimes the decisions that they come up with don't make sense for the on-the-ground workers, but they give it to management to sort out, and it turns into a problem when management or employees bring concerns back saying, you know, like, I know you think it's a really great idea that because our speaker system isn't working, that somebody's just going to bring in their Bluetooth one from home, but actually that's not going to work because it's not loud enough. And also, I don't want my Bluetooth stereo to get ruined. And also, customers think it's very weird.
Sure.
And then conversations like that end up being weirdly strenuous. And you tend to get pushback on really simple things like that, where it's like, it doesn't feel like it should be a discussion, but the person who makes the decisions isn't there, isn't present, and hands down these decisions for management to try to enforce. And because coffee is relatively cheap product that is sold in a lot of people's eyes relatively expensively, but most people who work in the industry don't make a lot. There isn't a lot of room for money to move around, which leads to some really uncomfortable moments when it comes to management in sort of that realm.
And Bobby, in your experience, in terms of benefits, what do you see or don't see typically out there in the restaurant industry, especially for servers?
Yeah, most servers, like Abby, like the baristas, don't really see any benefits. They do not have any paid holidays. They don't have any paid time off. Medical insurance is not offered. There's no retirement plan. None of that stuff that you see in other jobs. But some corporate restaurants do provide some paid time off, some vacation time, and some do provide some medical benefits as well.
Now, in terms of folks can go out on the exchange, healthcare marketplace here in Pennsylvania, folks use the national exchange. Abby, do you hear, do many baristas, are they able to afford getting healthcare on the marketplace, or do most folks go without, or what do you mostly see?
It's really mixed. I'm uninsured, and I have quite a few friends in the industry who are also uninsured. Some of my friends in the industry are in a low enough pay bracket that they're eligible for Medicare, Medicaid. I'm not one of them, but some of them are. And to be perfectly honest, most of my friends and acquaintances in the industry who are paying for healthcare through the marketplace are either were making more than I was in the industry, or they had a little bit of like spousal support where maybe the spouse or partner was not paying for it, but could cover some of the other life expenses to make it a little bit more attainable. I know that that has never personally been true for me, and thus I stay in the uninsured bracket. But I do know some friends who have done it and it's working for them, but overwhelmingly that's not the case, or there is an additional help.
And Bobby, what can you tell us about what you've seen out there in industry, what typically happens?
Yeah, typically, well, when I was working in the restaurant industry, I know that the Eaton Park that I was at, they did offer healthcare benefits if you worked at least 32 hours a week. And of course, it was deducted out of your paycheck. The employer covered some of the cost, but you were responsible for some of the costs too. And I know that a lot of employees were always worried about their hours and getting sent home early because they had to average that 32 hours a week in order to keep their benefits. I think that most workers in the restaurant industry cannot afford their own health insurance, even through the exchange system. I do know, I have talked to some workers who work in fine dining, and they have been able to purchase insurance through the exchange program. And although they seem to make a good deal more money working in fine dining, they still struggle with not being able to take a day off if they get sick, owing a ton of taxes at the end of the year, because every week or 2 weeks when they actually get a paycheck from their employer, it is zero. It all goes to taxes. Yeah, so they're not able to save money and they continue to experience issues as well. I know Eaton Park did give you a paid vacation every year. It was an extra week's pay, but you didn't get to like take a day here or take a day there. It was 1 month after your anniversary date, you would get an extra check.
And that ends part two of my interview with Bobby Linskins and Abby Rideout from the Restaurant Opportunity Center Pittsburgh. The third and final part will be a bonus episode in which we discuss the particular challenges food service employees face as the result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, we'll wrap up this episode with Larry McCullough, talking about upcoming online events hosted by the Battle of Homestead Foundation, along with another song selection of the week. And we're back here with our final segment on Essential Work, exploring the past, present, and future of jobs. Of course, this whole program and episode brought to you by the Battle of Homestead Foundation. This is Nathan Ruggles. And of course, here with me is our communications and music guy with the Battle of Homestead Foundation.
And that would be Larry McCullough. Howdy.
Yes. Thanks, Larry, for being here.
Yep.
And we're going to move forward here talking about your latest song selection. But first, we'll get into the latest from the Battle of Homestead Foundation in terms of events and goings on that anyone can join in online, right?
Exactly. Of course, Charlie's Monday Marker comes up every Monday. And basically, it's just Dr. Charles McAllister, who's a well-known historian of many things, but especially labor history in Western Pennsylvania. He takes those blue historical markers that you see all around town and delves into the background of them, the history. And he and Howard Scott actually, about 4 years ago, published a book, went around all these history sites and figured out what the real deep story of it is. So Charlie's Monday Marker is a 10-minute video tour with Dr. McAllister telling all about the history behind the marker. And then you can go out and actually look at it yourself.
And looking forward to having Charlie and Howard on the podcast here at some point in the future to talk in a little more detail about that whole project. But you should definitely check out the past episodes of Charlie's Monday Markers. And this past Monday, he actually went back to the Civil War era and an unfortunate, tragic accident that occurred here in this area, an industrial accident that coincidentally was also the time of the Battle of Antietam during the Civil War. So check that one out and subscribe to those upcoming episodes of Charlie's Monday Markers. Now, in terms of other events, Larry, what else is on the docket with the Battle of Homestead Foundation?
Well, Tuesday, September 29th at 7:30 p.m., We have a free Zoom online panel with members of the Allegheny County chapter of the National Conservation Organization, Isaac Walton League, which has been around since 1922 nationally. And the topic is protecting ourselves from the plastics invasion. And we're going to have three speakers, Dr. Patricia DeMarco, Dee Kucherka, who is a nutritionist and nurse, and Mike Stout, who is a very strong environmentalist. And basically, they're going to give a presentation that talks about ways you can not only cut down on your plastics use, but preserve your health from any of the bad effects it might cause, because plastics is sort of omnipresent in our environment. And it's also going to be co-sponsored with an organization called Pittsburghers Against Single-Use Plastic. And a lot of places around the country had actually banned single-use plastic. And then the pandemic came, and it's a little hard to enforce that or make that happen on a wide scale. You can sign up on Eventbrite. Also, the Battle of Homestead Foundation website. Just hit the link. It's free. And it's just another one of the ways Battle of Homestead Foundation tries to keep people informed.
Yes, you certainly hear about the plastic bags from groceries being banned in certain areas like that. And it seems like, you know, in the midst of a pandemic, other things have kind of taken front and center. But this program is going to remind us that the plastics are still out there. And of course, Patty DeMarco, familiar to listeners here on the podcast. She was in our premiere episode, and we'll be hearing from her again in the coming weeks, about once a month, with her interviews. Should also mention this event was a reschedule, so you didn't miss it if you thought you did. It's just on the 29th of September now. And of course, head out to battleofhomestead.org for more information on that and other upcoming events, including there's another one scheduled for October, right, Larry?
Yes, October 14th. Mike Stout, who is a singer and songwriter and an author, he has just written and published a new book. It's called Homestead Steel Mill, The Final 10 Years, USWA Local 1397, and the Fight for Union Democracy. Basically, it's Mike talking about what went on in the Homestead Steel Mill and a lot of labor activity in the late 70s, early 80s. And he was right there. He was not only a worker in the union and a union official and a steel worker in the mill. He kept track of what was going on. He just sort of did a micro and macro view of all the events and some of the efforts people were trying to do to save the mill, and then other efforts other people were trying to do to not save the mill. And he's also going to perform on October 14th a selection of his original music. He's written hundreds of songs, got about 20 albums out, and basically he just writes a song that responds to whatever political issue or crisis may be happening at the moment. And it's, I think historians in years from now are going to look back and say at his body of songs and say, wow, this is really kind of chronicling what was going on from a people's point of view. And that's happening October 14th. Again, it's a free Zoom event. So the event link will be up on Eventbrite and the Battle Homestead Foundation website.
Excellent. And yeah, it's the story very much grounded here in the Pittsburgh area. At the same time, it's a story that we heard all too often through that era across this country in terms of the struggles of workers in not just the steel industry, but industry in general, manufacturing, and what they were encountering and the struggles that they've had. And frankly, so much like the struggles that so many workers have had over decades and years and even centuries, right? So excellent book. Looks like it's going to be an excellent program. Chance to hear Mike's music. So we'll be looking forward to that and invite everyone to join. The Battle of Homestead Foundation putting out these events, moving all their programming online for everyone to enjoy. We should say, Larry, that's not it for the year, right? The Battle of Homestead Foundation is planning future events all the time.
Right. And if any podcast listeners have ideas, the program committee is always very interested in hearing from people. And we've gotten some really good response. And
been so, very popular. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so if you are a person or you know of a person that has a topic that you think is important in terms of labor or social issues of any kind, let us know.
Yeah. Open to suggestions. So excellent. And also, Larry, we should mention you take care of the Facebook page for the organization. And folks can always head there for a lot of the latest news and information.
Right.
Should also mention, in terms of this program, we take requests as well. So if you have any thoughts, feelings, ideas, comments, suggestions for us, for what we've been doing or what we could be doing here on the podcast, let us know. Give us a call. We have a listener line, 412-326-9435. That's 412-326-9435, that number, along with email bhfpodcast.nathan@gmail.com. That's in the episode description, so you can get that there. Also, you can always check out our past episodes. EssentialWorkPodcast.org is our website. Go there. You'll see links to all the past episodes and to all the most popular platforms for podcasts. So if you could take a moment, head out to Apple Podcasts as well. Like us there, recommend us there. That helps us out a lot. I'd also like to thank some folks who have been instrumental in making this program happen. That includes not just Larry here, but also Brittany Sheets. She did our logo that you can see everywhere. bsheetscreative.com is her website. Also, our music, Jason Kendall did it for us. It's original. You can check out his stuff at jasonkendallproductions.com. And we always count on Angela Bachman for assistance with all things audio engineering and technical. ThatSoundGirl.com is where you can find out more about her. All those links in the episode description. So let's get on with it here, Larry. So what do you have for us for this week's song selection?
Well, this is an unusual musical clip. We'll just start out with that. But it does have relevance to the rest of the program. The song is called Nickel and Dimed, and it is from a movie that was based on a stage play that was based on a book. And the book the book was titled Nickel and Dimed, yes, on Not Getting By in America. It was written by the social historian Barbara Ehrenreich in 1998. And if you don't know the story, she was a university professor who decided to see if she could survive for an entire year on the minimum wage.
That's right.
Which in the late 1990s was $6 an hour. So she went to several states and sort of went undercover and took a series of jobs as a waitress, hotel maid, cleaning woman, nursing home aide, Walmart sales clerk. And she lived in the absolutely cheapest lodging she could find, had no other expenses except just trying to survive.
She lived on what she earned from these jobs.
And she failed, of course. I mean, she really couldn't do that. But she did learn that no job is truly unskilled, and that one job for many people is not enough. And in America, if you want to sleep indoors, you basically need at least two if you're going to be at this level of wage earning. So the book Nickel and Dimed was very well received. And then a stage play was written in 2002 by a lady named Joan Holden of San Francisco. And that was performed around the country in the early 2000s. I actually saw a production in New York in 2006. It was put on by some friends who have a company called Three Graces Theater, starred a wonderful actress friend of ours, Margot Avery, Annie McGovern, a whole bunch of others.
Very good. Very good. I saw myself up in Cleveland around the same time. Cleveland Public Theater put on a production as well.
Yeah. And then that production and the book, Nickel and Dimed, it was written up as a song and then used as a basis for a movie called The American Ruling Class. And The American Ruling Class is a feature film. It appeared in 2005, and it was written by Lewis Lapham, who is the longtime editor of Harper's Magazine. And the plot is sort of a documentary, sort of a musical, whatever. It's hard to describe, basically, but the plot—
Something unique.
Yeah. The plot is two young Yale University graduates, and they're trying to decide, is it better to work to change the system from the inside or from the outside? So one graduate goes to Wall Street, gets a great job. The other takes a job waiting tables in a restaurant and tries to be a writer. And in this movie, it has people like Kurt Vonnegut, Pete Seeger, William Howard Taft IV, the filmmaker Robert Altman, Walter Cronkite, the people's historian Howard Zinn, a whole bunch of people just sort of wander in and debate the question, is there an American ruling class? And in the movie, at a certain point, Barbara Ehrenreich, the author of the original Nickel and Dimed book, she plays a waitress. And she sits down with one of the graduates who's just taken the job on Wall Street, and they start discussing the value of philanthropy. And Ehrenreich replies, the real philanthropists in our society are the people who work for less than they can actually live on, because they're giving their time, their energy, their talents all the time so that people like you can be dressed well and fed cheaply and so on.
Very good.
They are giving to you. So that's the real philanthropy. And like I said, it's a very unusual film. And right after this conversation, the waitress goes back into the kitchen. And suddenly, the kitchen crew starts singing this song, Nickel and Dimed. Guitars, banjos appear from behind the stoves and dishpans, and everyone starts singing.
In true musical film style, sounds like.
Absolutely. And then the camera moves from the kitchen into a whole bunch of people working their service jobs and singing the lyrics as they go along. And like I say, I recommend listeners read the original book by Aaron Reich, Nickel and Dimed, even more relevant today with our current economic structure.
Absolutely. Larry, hearing from Barbara Ehrenreich in the film, talking about philanthropy, she is so insightful, obviously right there, so insightful with her book and very powerful bestseller. So thank you for bringing this to us here today, Larry.
Well, I just thought it had relevance with, again, the Restaurant Opportunity Center and all the service jobs, which are, again, suddenly people are paying more attention to them as to how they actually really resonate through society. And the movie is actually available on DVD, and it's worth watching. It's real people talking about real stuff, even though it sort of has a fictional plot. And we have more information about the song on EssentialWorkPodcast.com. And here is a short audio clip of Nickel and Dimed from the film The American Ruling Class.
Wipe the counter, make the beds, and
stack the shirts,
and sell the bread,
or work the vegetable coffee,
take orders for delivery,
do the floors and greet the guests,
and wear the name tag on my chest.
Nickel and dime.
2021 has been a year of transition for all of us. At the Battle of Homestead Foundation, they have discovered new ways to advance their mission of heritage, education, and social action. They expanded their educational outreach to include a weekly online tour of people's history locations through the Charlie's Monday Marker video series, as well as far-reaching discussion of social and economic trends with the podcast Essential Work, The Past, Present, and Future of Jobs. They presented 7 timely online public panels featuring nationally known authors and historians. Topics included workforce shifts from heavy industry to healthcare, the women's suffrage movement, uprooted immigrant neighborhoods, protest songs in today's civil action movements, the 1921 Battle of Blair Mountain, historical roots of today's social philanthropy, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania's world-famous city steps. They establish a professionally archived labor history collection, thousands of documents, photos, recordings, and remembrances of labor history spanning decades. They co-sponsored the Blair Mountain Centennial in West Virginia, honoring a long neglected part of U.S. history with a landmark Labor Day weekend of events. They built a new and more accessible website, which you should check out at battleofhomestead.org. They did all this with help, the essential support of all the individuals like you who enjoyed the programming, appreciate the hard work of the citizens, workers, educators, and historians that make it happen, and value their mission to preserve, interpret, and promote a people's history focused on the significance of the dramatic labor conflict at Homestead, Pennsylvania in 1892. In 2022, they'll present a new round of thought-provoking programming. Membership, along with special donations, is essential to their success. Annual membership is only $30, $20 for retirees or the underemployed, and just $10 for students. Join now at battleofhomestead.org. You can also choose to contribute at any of a number of special donor levels, and donations are tax deductible. Membership also provides multiple free admissions to a variety of historical museums and sites in the greater Pittsburgh area. Check out the details at battleofhomestead.org. As this singular year comes to a close, while we still may have much to be thankful for, we also all see the urgent necessity of doing more to share our progressive labor history to a wider audience and inspire a new generation of activists and organizers. Your membership and engagement ensures that the Battle of Homestead Foundation will continue to do just that. Show your support today at battleofhomestead.org. In solidarity, BHF thanks you and wishes you good health, positive spirits, and both peaceful and joyous days ahead.